eagerness to hear about Krishna, to chant about Krishna, to surrender to Krishna, to find shelter in Krishna. We could use the example of the little gopas or cowherd boys, that they were hungry. Actually, according to some commentators, the cowherd boys felt that Krishna and Balaram were hungry. And they knew that if they said, Krishna and Balaram, we want to get food for you, Krishna and Balaram would say, no, we are happy. So in order, but if they said that we're hungry, then Krishna Balaram would feel so much compassion upon them, they would give a solution. So they wanted to serve. They said, we are hungry. In spiritual life, it is important that we recognize the hunger of our heart. Hunger of the stomach, you put some food, but then it gets hungry again. And you put some more food, and hungry again, and you put more food, and that's how we spend our life. And when you're dead, you're not hungry anymore. But then you go to another body because you still want food. So you get to another body and you're hungry and you feed it 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 and then you die and for a while you're not hungry anymore and then you take another birth and you're hungry. What's the first thing a baby wants? Yes? Usually babies cry because they're hungry. At least that's what mothers do. The hunger of the heart. We're hungry for love, we're hungry for Krishna. And that's the most important hunger to feed. But that hunger is something very wonderful. Just as without hunger you can't digest food. This is an Ayurvedic principle. Usually when you go to an Ayurvedic doctor, they ask you, how is your appetite? How is your digestion? Kind of step by step. And then they ask, how is your motions? Motion is a very nice word for what actually happens. But it's all about digestion. Hunger is necessary for digestion. And similarly, to digest knowledge, spiritual knowledge, then there needs to be a hunger for that knowledge. And when we have that hunger for that knowledge, hunger to serve, hunger to hear, hunger to purify ourselves, in association with people who have faith, we develop faith. Maharaj was speaking about the power of faith. Just yesterday I came from Govardhan, where the day before yesterday I left at 5 in the morning for Vrindavan, for our beloved Shyamdasji's last rites. And yesterday at 5 in the morning I left Vrindavan for Bombay. But we were in a place called Sarabi Kunj, where the last rites were performed. And just close to there, where we just went by, is the temple of Punchuri Lota Baba. Please raise your hand if you have been to that temple. It's a very special temple. He kind of looks like Hanuman because he's that very beautiful saffron orange color. But the difference is he's quite fat. And Hanuman is usually not fat. And he's kind of a little boy, but does he have a mustache? He's a little boy with a mustache. But the story of Pancheri Lota Baba is Kamsa sent Akrura to Vrindavan to bring Krishna and Balaram to Mathura for this wrestling arena. That's a long story, which we can discuss another time. So Krishna and Balaram were going to leave Vrindavan. From the time that he appeared, he had never left Vrindavan. In fact, there's a beautiful verse that Krishna never leaves Vrindavan because he's always in the hearts of those who love him there. And he's always performing his aprakata lila, the lila that can't be seen with the physical eyes. But for about 12 and a half years, he was actually there doing physical things that could be seen by physical eyes. So when he was leaving, it's such a story. The gopis, the beautiful devotee cowherd girls, they were literally laying their bodies in front of the chariot of Akrura. Like Maharaj was describing Prahlad. That the snake of separation from Krishna, which means the snake of forgetfulness of Krishna, for Prahlad was millions of times more painful than the bites of millions of sort of poisonous snakes. So for them to end their life was an easy thing, but to be without Krishna. But somehow Krishna moved them, and he was riding by, and there was a cowherd boy he happened to pass. His name was Lota Baba. And Lota Baba said, "Krishna Balaram, I cooked some prasad for you. So please come and eat my prasad." Krishna said, "I'm going to Mathura. Akrura is taking me." He said, "Well, first place." Krishna said, "I will be back the day after tomorrow. Just wait." So Krishna left. Came back about 100 years later, yes? And that's the place, Pancheri, the very, very tail end of Govardhan Hill, where this gopa would, he sat and just waited. He wouldn't eat because he already prepared prasad for Krishna, and he wouldn't eat himself until Krishna ate. And he had so much faith in Krishna's words that "I will return," he sat there for about 100 years, didn't move, just waited and waited. He has a little stick, cowherd boy stick. And the reason he looks fat is because he was completely nourished by his faith. In the Bible, it describes faith can move mountains. There's no greater power than faith, because true faith actually connects us to that inconceivable power of God, of Krishna, of Bhagavan. Connects us to that power. And that faith can help us overcome all obstacles. I was speaking about my dear god sister Amekala, how she was on her deathbed. She was a very, very dynamic lady. Her whole life. She was a mother of, I think, about 4 or 5 children. And she was very much an activist in everything she did. She was always arranging festivals, arranging programs, arranging, you know, so many things. If she saw something wasn't right, she was right there to do everything she could to make it right. If she saw injustice, she'd fight for justice. Very powerful lady. But a sweet motherly devotee too. The combination is very powerful. So here she was on her deathbed, paralyzed, can't walk. When somebody is like that and they have to be spoon-fed by somebody else, by your husband, she couldn't go to the bathroom, her husband had to actually, you know, clean her, like kind of diaper situation. Very difficult. And she was emaciated, and she was just about a week or so before death, or let us say, transition. And she told Shrutikirti Prabhu, our dear God brother, that she was feeling herself so insignificant because she was so totally physically helpless. But then she smiled and she said, I may be insignificant, but because I'm part of Krishna, that makes me supremely significant. Because Krishna loves me, that gives me unlimited eternal significance. Because Krishna loves me, that gives me such great relevance in my life. She was completely blissful. And then she became even more blissful. And she said, because Krishna loves everyone, everyone is supremely relevant. Everyone has supreme significance. Everyone has inconceivable, unlimited, eternal value. Because Krishna loves us all. That was her faith. And in that faith, she realized there was no such thing as death. The soul's love for Krishna and Krishna's love for the soul. It's the highest truth and it's the highest reality. And the bridge from this mortal world to that immortal realization that's within our hearts is the bridge of faith. But not blind faith. Real faith. Sometimes very materialistic people say that, you know, they don't like religion because it's based on faith. But 99.999% of everything we believe in this world is based on faith. People say seeing is believing. I want evidence. Almost everything that we believe to be true, we don't have that evidence. We look at the sun. How big is the sun? To my eyes, it looks about this big, right? Yes? But how big is the sun? It's like a million times bigger than the earth or something like that. I'm not a scientist. But it's gigantic. And it looks this big. So how do we know it's so big? It's not because of what we see every day. It's because we learned. We learned from people who did the research, who did the investigation, who had the telescopes, or who had the scriptures, or whatever it may be, and they have told us how big the sun is. How many of you have personally met Mahatma Gandhi? Do you believe that he was here in India? In fact, for you guests, you will be pleased to know that he used to come to our temple regularly. That little temple downstairs, that temple has been here for about 100 years. Lakshmi Narayan. And Gandhiji's house is just a couple blocks away. It's a museum now. And he used to come here and worship these deities. And when the British came to arrest him, he hid in the temple. And the pujari locked the door. And when the soldiers came, he said, the deity is sleeping. I can't open the door. Now, if the British would have broken the door down of a temple, that would have been a very big problem for them. So they searched for hours this whole building, the British soldiers, because they saw him coming this way. And after the British soldiers left, they couldn't find him. The pujari opened the door of the temple, and he disguised himself and got on a train and went to Kerala. Why did I tell that story? Oh, okay, faith. I wasn't acting, I actually forgot. So none of you have seen Mahatma Gandhi. But how many of you have any question of a doubt that he ever existed? We learn from hearing. We learn from people who met him, people who knew him. We learn from books, from encounters. How many of you have been to Antarctica? Do you believe it exists? It's faith. It's faith in our books. And you know what we put our faith in. When I went to school in America, you know, naturally I have faith in the books I'm reading in school when I'm a little boy. And history talks all about the history of America. And there's a major part, the Revolutionary War. Kind of the same situation with Gandhi, except a lot more violent. You know, there was the Boston Tea Party and all that stuff that happened. And then there was a war, the Revolutionary War. And what I was taught when I was a little child in school, in fact, Susan lived in the same town as me at the same time. Rukmini Devi's loving little sister and Gorbani's auntie. We were taught that the British were such tyrants. That they were exploiting our country, they were taxing our country, and the king was so greedy, and they were trying to subjugate and everything. And you know, these innocent Americans wanted independence and freedom from this tyranny, and they declared Declaration of Independence, and then there was a war, and the French came and saved us, and we won the war. Then when I was 19, I went to England. And by this time, I didn't have faith in anything except there's a God behind it all. That's the only thing I had faith. I started asking these British people my age, what did you learn in school about the Revolutionary War in America? They said that the British were very dignified, cultural, moral, human people, and these Americans were like animals. These colonists, they just wanted anarchy, and they were trying to give culture, and these people just revolted against culture and dignity and humanity. That's a different perspective of history. And who's right? Doesn't matter. What really matters is who am I, and what is our actual relationship with each other? If we don't understand our actual spiritual relationship with one another, then we can just fight endlessly over these trivial, whose land belongs here. Janasya mohoyam aham mameti. The basic principle of all ignorance is, I am this body, and those things in relationship to this body are mine. My body. My nation, my skills, my bank account. Sarva Loka Maheshwaram. Bhoktaram Jagatapasam Sarva Loka Maheshwaram. The Gita gives a simple peace formula. It gives peace within our own mind and can actually give peace in the world. And that peace formula is to understand that Krishna, or God, is the proprietor of everything. Whatever we have is just entrusted to us. And that ultimately Krishna is the controller, and everything should be used in harmony with Krishna's will. And when we do that, we all naturally see the divinity within ourselves. And then we share. We don't fight. That's actually human consciousness. So we believe so many things on the basis of faith. When we wake up in the morning with our plans to go to school or go to work, we have faith that we're going to get there. Do we know we're going to get there? Padam padam yagdi padam natesham. We don't even know that we're going to be able to walk down the stairs. Because things happen in this world. Pakistan has bombs aimed right here. Just one person just goes, and we won't go down the stairs. We could go a better place, actually. We could go upstairs. So most everything we believe is true is based on faith that's beyond our own limited sensual experience. So the faith that Maharaj is speaking about is faith that has been given by Krishna, or God himself in the Bhagavad Gita, or in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And the faith that has been, the knowledge and wisdom that has been realized by the most enlightened, compassionate, wonderful beings. I remember one time I was giving a class in a college, and in front of all the students, the professor said, "How do you know? How do you know that there is life after death?" And of course, if you actually have some realization and you know because you experience it, you can't really tell people that because they won't believe you. And I don't say I have that. But I explained to him, we all have faith. You have faith in so many things. Who's your mother and who's your father? You have faith in. Because none of us actually remember that moment when we came out of our mother's womb. Do you remember? Do you have a scene of where it was, and what was around, and who was talking what? And you saw your mother, and you saw your father, and you saw the doctors, or whoever. Absolutely, I've never met anybody that had that memory. So we have faith that this is my mother and this is my father because that's what I was told. It's reasonable faith. It's faith in a truth. But that truth is beyond our sensory experience. So when the scientists tell us certain things, the great saints tell us certain things, and so many other people tell us certain things. But here are, throughout history, the most blissful, the most compassionate, the people who are the most intoxicated with ecstatic love, without selfishness, the people without fear, the people with the highest character, they have faith in this. Through all the spiritual paths, throughout history, the true saints, they have faith in the supreme Godhead. They have faith in the eternality of the soul. So why not have faith in such enlightened beings? And when we put that, when we take that challenge of putting faith in the words of the enlightened beings by just opening our hearts to receive it, and gradually we start getting experience of it. An experience that's not tangible to the worldly senses, but can be felt and can be experienced as a higher reality than anything the senses perceive. And as that faith develops and grows and grows and grows, it becomes realization. And it blossoms, that seed that Maharaj was talking about, blossoms into the flower of love. But to nourish that faith, that shraddha, that a hunger is required, a sense of urgency. Otherwise, if we don't have a sense of urgency, we will not have the willpower to not be distracted by the endless weapons of mass distraction that are all around us. Just like if you have a serious appointment and you're late, that's kind of the way I always am. For those who know me, if you have a serious appointment because you're late and you're going there and somebody says, oh, can I talk to you about this, and you know, would you like to, you know, have a snack? You're focused on getting there because you know you're late. There's a sense of urgency. To make real spiritual progress on the path of yoga, we need a focus. And when there's a sense of urgency, there's a focus. If you're really, really thirsty and hungry, then only water can satisfy that, and only food. If somebody comes and says, would you like to come to the market and buy a garland? Unless you're a cow and you can eat flowers. You won't go to the market to get you'll go to get food. So similarly, when we understand the nature of this world, our beloved Shyamdasji, you know, he went to Krishna for sure. He gave his life, his soul, his everything for Krishna. How many of you knew him? Please raise your hands. Very special to me, because when I left India in 1972, because my visa expired, the next year, 73, he came to India. And he came to Vrindavan, where I was living. And the people who were my closest friends became his closest friends. If any of you read The Journey Home, the book I wrote, there was Asim Krishna. Asim. He was such a brother and friend. He became Shyamdas's best friend. And Sripad Baba started taking Shyamdas all around to places. And so many of the others, almost everybody that I was knowing, he was doing the same thing and meeting the same people. And of course, he became initiated in the Pushti Marg, which was quite amazing. The Pushti Marg is a lineage of great Vaishnavas from the beginning of creation. It's the Rudra Sampradaya, beginning with Shiva. And coming down through Ballabhacharya, he was the first non-Indian, the first person from the Western world ever to get initiated in the Pushti Marg. And he brought so many others after that. Just by his devotion, his faith. So when we would, anyways, my friends in Vrindavan would always tell me about him. And our friends in Vrindavan would always tell him about me. But somehow or other, by Krishna's arrangement, it wasn't the time. About 30 years went by and we never met. And then we met in New York City. And as soon as we met, and we just shared our lives with each other, we were lifelong friends. And I remember somebody came in the room and I said, I want to introduce you to my lifelong dear friend, Shamdas, who I met today. That was the relationship. And there was no one else that I could speak about the things I spoke about, and he spoke with me because we were the only two left that were really there at that time that was such a transformative part of our lives. He would perform puja for his Srinathji deity for hours, about 2-3 hours every day, wherever he was. He went very deep in whatever he did. He learned Sanskrit, he became a scholar, Sanskrit and Brijbhas language. He was translating ancient texts into English, so many books. He would give lectures. He learned classical kirtan. I mean, when I sing kirtan, it's like the howling of a jackal. One musician once told me that the amazing thing about you is I've never heard you sing a note correctly. But still, it seems like everyone likes your singing. I don't know if the second part is true, but definitely the first part. But he was actually trained as a classical singer of ragas. And he played beautiful harmonium in the classical Brijavasi style. He played these Drupada style of singing and mridanga playing. Incredible. And his cooking, did you ever have his cooking? How he could cook. It was the traditional form of cooking, according to the Pushti Marak, how for centuries they would make preparations for Srinathji. And he was in that parampara. He knew all these ways of making sabjis and making rotis and making rice. And he did a lot of other stuff too. But it was all pure prasad. And when I would go to his house, I would be chanting japa for several hours in one room, and he would be in the next room cooking. And the whole time he's cooking, he's singing these beautiful, beautiful Brijabasi and Sanskrit bhajans. Total absorption. That's how he would prepare his food. Totally singing with such devotion. These wonderful, wonderful songs about Krishna and Radha and Vrindavan and Bhakti, written by enlightened saints. He would take that bhoga food, offer it to Srinathji, and he would call me in, and we would have bhajan and kirtan, and we would take prasad. I was telling one story. We were at some of our common friends' home, David Life and Sharon Gannon, and Shamdas invited them for dinner. And they were supposed to come in 1 hour. So we were driving back to Shamdas's house near Woodstock, New York. And Shamdas says, you know, we have to prepare something because we just invited these guests. And he said, but I don't have any food in the house. So we stopped at this grocery store. I've been in India a long time. I never go shopping. I know swamis are not supposed to hate things, but I hate shopping. It just, if there's more than one selection, I get bewildered. If you go into a store and there's a big arrow that says this is the only possible toothpaste you can buy, then I could probably survive. But otherwise, it's just such a mess. And we went into this grocery store that was gigantic. It was like 20 times bigger than this temple. And it was freezing cold. And they had everything, everywhere. And he said, would you like to help me shop? And I said, Swamis don't know how to shop. I said, when I was a little boy, my mother would take me shopping and I would run away. Because I just don't like shopping. I would run away. And then my mother would try to find me and I would run. And she usually had to call the police to try to find me somewhere. I'd be lost and I'd be crying because I was lost. But that was my childhood. I'm not much different. So we go into the grocery market. He says, you find this, 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 this. And I said, and he said, then you just push the cart. So I'm pushing the cart. And he was like, in about 5 minutes, maybe literally about 7 or 8 minutes, he filled up 2 shopping carts. He just knew exactly what, where, how. And then he just rushed it, and we're through. We were in and out of that place within 10 minutes. We got to his house. He went into the kitchen. He's singing his songs. He looks like he has all the time in the world, but he's like... And within a half hour, he had like a feast of about a dozen preparations. And his guests come, and you know, he's just like calm and cool. He's already offered it to Srinathji. We do a little kirtan together. He was very, very incredible, focused person. What was that focus? He cared. He really wanted to please Krishna. And he really wanted to please Krishna's guests. This is not my house. This is Krishna's house. These are Krishna's guests. And let me please Krishna, and let me please Krishna's guests. It was that devotion. It was that mood of service. It was that love that empowered him to be so focused. And nothing to distract when you have that focus. So when he was in Goa, and he was riding on a motorcycle, and he crashed. Somebody crashed into him, and he was gone. In fact, from Goa, he was scheduled. The room was already put aside. He was scheduled to come to Radha Gopinath Temple here for the flower festival. He was supposed to come the day before the flower festival on the 25th, and all arrangements were made. He had all his plans. But Krishna had another plan. So how do we understand? Certain things are not understood with the intellect, because they're beyond the intellect. Certain things can actually only be understood through faith. Not blind faith. Divine faith. Faith. Srila Prabhupada, my beloved Guru Maharaj, would say, if you want to understand the truth, don't see through your eyes. Because how much can we see through our eyes? We can't see beyond these walls. It says we see through the eyes of the scriptures. We see through the eyes of the enlightened sages. And then we actually get that experience. And then we see. One who gives his life, his 100%, everything for the loving service of Krishna. Man manatava madbhakto madhya jimnam namaskuru mame vaishya shishatyam te prati jani priyoshine. Krishna tells in Gita, always think of me, become my devotee, worship me, offer your homage to me, and you will come to me without fail. This is my promise, because you are my dear loving friend. So with someone who lives in this spirit, we know that they go to Krishna. Whatever the physical situation, that precious, beloved, enlightened soul is being embraced by Krishna, being escorted by Sri Guru, Sri Radha, to the lotus feet of Krishna. So that we know for sure. But on this earthly plane, such a lesson. Whatever our plans are, however ordinary things may appear in our daily life, we just don't know for sure what the next moment will bring. And when these kinds of situations are either in our own life or somebody very dearly loved or close to us, it wakes us up to really evaluate what really is important in my life. It's the tendency of the monkey of the mind to be jumping around in such a way to think things that really are not very important at all, to be so important. Superficial things we become so much frustrated with. We spend so much of our time and our life struggling and striving and to attain it. We fight over it. We divorce over it. We hate each other over it. We commit terrorism over it. We declare world wars over it. About superficial things that really don't mean much of anything from the perspective of truth or eternity or the soul. When we don't have that higher taste and that focus, then a little pebble of sand, the mind, the ego, expands it into a massive, immovable Himalayan mountain. But if we have wisdom, based on that truth, faith in that truth, then we see the grain of sand for what it really is. And we actually focus on what's really important in life. And we honor the grain of sand, and we do the needful for the grain of sand. We don't neglect, but we understand what's really of value. And this is one of the blessings of the temporariness of this world, is if we're actually sensitive, the fact that everything is changing and we don't know, it gives us a sense of what really is valuable. What is beyond birth and beyond death? Who am I? And what is a true? What is it I want? The holy name of God, Krishna, is Krishna who has descended to purify our heart, to inspire, to empower us with his love. Thank you very much.